This is Maryland Viewpoints, an in-depth discussion of the events and issues impacting our state. Now, from the studios of the Maryland News Network, this is Maryland Viewpoints with Meredith Marks.
Welcome to Maryland Viewpoints. I'm Meredith Marks, and this week we are chatting with Dr. Ernest Grant, who is the president of the American Nurses Association. So important to have you on today, Dr. Grant. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a really important topic because these kind of are our current heroes. These are the people that are putting themselves on the front lines to help the sick and putting themselves at risk. And some of them are having a tough time finding PPE, and they're having a tough time having some support for getting some of these products to them. How are nurses managing right now with COVID-19 response efforts?
Well, it's very stressful, as you can imagine, but, as nurses, we're very strong, we're capable, we're reliable and, have been proven responders doing infectious disease emergencies such as the COVID-19 crisis that we are facing. We continue to provide safe, quality, and compassionate care to our patients as well as to the community.
So what are the top things that nurses are in desperate need of right now? I know we're obviously talking about masks and gloves. What else is needed in these situations?
Well, nurses on the front line are in need of a number of things. We actually did a survey and heard from well over 10,000 nurses, and the number one thing that they stated that they needed was the adequate personal protective equipment. And this is in addition to, when we think of protection equipment, we think of the N95 respirator, which is a component of that. But that's also the face shield or goggles, it's gloves, it is gowns, it is the plastic jumpsuit. All those things together helps to make a complete protection for the healthcare provider so that they are not transmitting the virus, and also, protecting the public as well. So that was the number one overwhelming thing that nurses were reporting. In addition to that, the additional test kits and, of course, additional training. They need to know what is their role in each of the particular healthcare facilities' disaster response plan. Obviously, the more they are educated about that plan, the better they understand what they are responsible for doing and able to take further steps to help mitigate the spread of this virus.
So it's interesting that you bring up more training. I mean, has each hospital and each facility really dove into that and added, some emergency crisis courses to give to these frontline, essential workers?
Well, what we are hearing is about half of the facilities are very well prepared and have communicated their plans to the nursing staff and other members of the healthcare team. And other nurses report that they do not feel that they are fully informed about that. Obviously, each facility is challenged to develop their own emergency response plan, and usually that's done in coordination with the state emergency preparedness team as well. But again, the more nurses know about what their particular role is, obviously it helps to make that plan run that much more smoother. So that's what we feel needs to be done, is making sure that there is proper communication. And as you know, this we're finding out new things about this virus every day. So that's why it's important to go back and review with the latest information that you have found, how does that affect the disaster preparedness plan that is currently in place?
That's really true, Doctor, because let me tell you, this virus is new to everybody. So everybody that's tackling this is learning new things every single day. And it's kind of this day-to-day basis where you have to roll with it to see what it's going to do, how it plays out, and how it affects, and if antibodies are built up, and if you can get it again. We're learning all of this as we go. So it's the unknown, which is even scarier, to be honest with you, right?
Yes, it is the unknown, and that's why, again, it's so important that we do communicate and so that everyone knows what their role is and take the proper steps to help mitigate this virus.
Now, we know that there are a lot of people that are wanting to assist and help because most people, for the most part, are in their homes. And so people are offering their services to make masks and to make things, you know, for this protection gear to be able to give to these essential workers. I know that there's been talk that some of these nurses have been threatened by supervisors or hospital administrators not to wear their own, or they could face termination. I mean, how do you guys respond to that? Isn't any mask better than no mask? And even though it has to be a special grade, there's just not enough to go around. So what do you suggest that they do?
Well, thank you for that question. And one of the things that that we've been stressing is that nurses and other members of the healthcare team need the highest level of protection, or respiratory protection, which is what that N95 respirator will provide. And so it is necessary to protect nurses and other members of the healthcare team when doing that. So, you know, therefore, we need access to these very important masks that are there. At the American Nurses Association, though, we do not support nurses using what we call a lower level of respiratory protection, such as the cloth mask or the homemade materials, because they do not provide the highest level of protection. So we do not believe at this point in time in this pandemic that we're at a point where nurses need to be using homemade equipment. Now, that being said, obviously, you know, people in the community who want to, to make those masks and et cetera, we strongly urge them, first of all, to contact their local healthcare facility where they may be donating those and seeing, coordinating with them as far as their needs and where those masks may be needed in other areas, perhaps, which will free up those N95 masks that could be used in, where the more acute care is being done.
So who is in discussions with the big manufacturers that make the N95 masks and other crucial PPE products? I mean, are they able to, pump this stuff out at a quicker rate? And what is being done?
Well, the American Nurses Association has been in contact with the White House task force on the COVID-19 task force, as well as with members of Congress and governors in the various states as well. And we're glad that they're listening to nurses because we are there at the front line, and we want them to continue to listen to nurses. And when the president invoked the DPA Act, which is the Defense Production Act, that does allow for manufacturers to begin to make the not only the components for the ventilators, but these the mask and other pieces of protective equipment that we need. However, we know that it's going to take a while for those to enter the supply chain because they have to retool their their organizations in order to meet that need. So that may be quite some time, weeks even before we begin to see those pieces of equipment begin to be turned out. So it's extremely important that we urge Congress and the task force to continue to monitor the supply chain and ensure that those personal protective equipment are gotten to the hot spots or to areas where there's the greatest need at the moment to ensure that that will continue. And also to allocate additional funds, for that as well, for additional testing and for additional supplies, because obviously as this outbreak continues to grow, there's going to be an increased need for those supplies. And obviously it's going to cost money to have that.
Now, I did speak to a doctor's office, just a local doctor's office yesterday, and they said that they were only allowed to order one box of PPE grade gloves for their office. And and that's scary, because, people have to still see their doctors, even though it might not be in a hospital setting. How do you advocate for these people that have to work without proper PPE? And what do you expect them to do? What do you suggest that they do? What are the proper ways to take care of this if they don't have the proper PPE and they have to see patients?
Well, one of the things is obviously, as we know, this is a challenging time. This is a crisis, and we need to ensure that the personal protective equipment is gotten to the place where it is most needed, which is obviously going to mostly, in most cases, be in the acute care setting. That is not to say that they should not be, gotten to like the doctor's office or individuals in public health or clinics and things of that sort. What we are seeing, though, is the use of telemedicine and telehealth. Yes. So if the doctor's office has the opportunity or connection to be able to do that, that would be one of the best way to not only minimize the spread by not having the patient come out of their residence and sitting there in the doctor's office and maybe be exposed that way, but it's also reducing, it's going the other way, it's reducing the healthcare provider's exposure that way as well. So in most cases what we're finding is there's an increased use in the use of telehealth or telemedicine, and that has driven down the need for doctor's offices to have the PPEs. We still recognize that there is the need for that, obviously, for the person that is going to still need to be seen in person, but it helps to reduce the amount of usage of the supplies.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually I'm going to be speaking to Chief Medical Officer Jason Halleck next on telemedicine. So we're going to dive into that. Thank you so much, Dr. Ernest Grant, for coming on, President of the American Nurses Association. It was a pleasure. I appreciate having you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a short break. Maryland Viewpoints will continue right after this.
We're all neighbors. We're all impacted by COVID-19. We all need each other, and local businesses need our support. Visit Harford is using HarfordCountyRestaurantWeek.com, where local restaurants and businesses can be listed. You can access this list to support our community. These are not discounts, but a location where you can find local businesses to support. The website again is HarfordCountyRestaurantWeek.com. Thank you, and support local.
This is an American Red Cross blood donation alert. We are currently facing a severe blood shortage during this coronavirus outbreak. Healthy blood and platelet donors are asked to make an appointment to give now. Donating blood is safe and can help save lives. Cancer patients, accident victims, and so many others continue to need life-saving blood. Please schedule your appointment now by visiting redcrossblood.org or by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS. You can make a difference.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
Starting route. Your destination is 0.1 miles away.
If you drive less than
500 feet, turn left. You have arrived at your destination.
If you drive less than 25 miles a day, you could be paying less every day with pay-per-mile car insurance from Allstate. You get the same reliable coverage and hands-on expertise you'd expect from Allstate, but now at a price that's tailored to the miles you drive.
Call your local Allstate agent and start paying what's right for you. Prices daily and per-mile rate, subject to terms, conditions, and availability.
Welcome back to Maryland Viewpoints. I'm your host, Meredith Marks. Joining me now is Dr. Jason Halleck, Chief Medical Officer at SOC Telemed. Well, it's really interesting talking about this specific topic because this is kind of becoming the world today. We're talking about telemedicine, and this is to keep a lot of people safe. I know that my doctor's offices have sent me emails saying, hey, we're available for you through a video chat to have your office appointment if you can't come in, and maybe it's better. Tell people why we're going that route.
Sure. Well, let me just tell you our interesting perspective on telemedicine, and then we can talk about how it's being used today. I'm the chief medical officer at SOC Telemedicine, and I'm also a practicing ER physician. At SOC, we have over 200 specialist doctors in critical care, neurology, and psychiatry that we provide to hospitals nationwide. But also telemedicine on our platform is now used by over 550 hospitals across the nation, and that technology connects patients with doctors every day, including hospitalists, ER doctors, cardiologists, and infectious disease specialists. But as you've said, most primary care physicians, due to the response to this crisis, have gotten up and running with some sort of telemedicine to be able to care for their patients at home, and that's a fantastic resource.
So what does that include? I mean, how do you know that you're eligible for a remote exam rather than needing to actually physically go in and get examined in person?
Sure. Well, there's two sides to that. And one is, coverage, which you mentioned, and Medicare is nationally covering telemedicine. Medicaid is covering telemedicine, and almost all private insurance plans are now covering telemedicine. So I think the first thing is, if you're not having severe symptoms and having mild symptoms like fever or cough, is to call your primary care physician. If you do have more severe symptoms and need to be seen in the hospital, like trouble breathing or any chest pressure or more severe type things, telemedicine looks, a little different, but again, can bring you an ER doctor or specialist to your bedside in minutes. So it could look like this. You might arrive at the ER at your local hospital. And of course, we want patients, if they can, to call first before they come if they think they have coronavirus. You would register as normal, and then trained staff would bring over a telemedicine cart or another web-enabled device like an iPad or a tablet. And next, your ER doctor or specialist that you need would appear on screen and be able to see you, hear you, and work with the hospital staff that are probably standing next to you to provide the care that you need. Many times, this only takes minutes.
And this is also, I want to bring this to light. This is also to prevent any contamination to our providers. I mean, this is to keep not only the patient safe, but to keep our doctors and our nurses safe as well, right?
Absolutely. It's protecting both doctors and patients. You know, coronavirus is novel, but telemedicine's been around for 20 to 30 years. But I don't think we ever really thought it would play such an important role in an infectious disease pandemic. The point is, there's really no better infection control measure that we can take than telemedicine to protect the doctors and the patients. Doctors on the front lines can't get sick if they're providing care by telemedicine, and they can continue to work and care for others. They can also work if they're quarantined or unfortunately become sick, well, hopefully not too sick. And telemedicine protects the public and patients too, because there's growing concern about what happens if you were to contract COVID-19 in a healthcare setting.
Absolutely. And so are doctors allowed to do prescriptions through telemedicine and kind of anything else that would generally just be needed?
Yes. So doctors can they can make diagnoses by telemedicine. They can care for patients in almost every state. There's no restriction on providing prescriptions for patients if they're needed. And so much more can be done in the hospital setting with a little bit more advanced technology of finer pan-tilt zoom cameras and other peripherals. It really enhances the experience between the patient and the doctor. The doctor can see much more fine details. Hopefully the broadband connections are good and they can have a good interaction with patients. There's a number of peripherals that can be attached to telemedicine technology, technologies such as stethoscopes to listen to heart and lungs, and otoscopes to look in ears, or even what we call ophthalmoscopes, which allow doctors to look into a patient's eyes.
Wow. So patients that have their regular doctors, obviously they would know if these are covered through their health insurance. What if they need to have an appointment with somebody that they haven't seen before? And how do they find out if it's covered by insurance?
Sure. Well, first thing is to find out what's covered is to check with your insurance plan. But also, if you don't have a primary care physician and you want to access telemedicine, almost every local hospital's websites now have some link to access their group of primary care doctors. And increasingly, they've gotten up to speed to provide some telemedicine technologies. But it's not just for patients and their primary care physician. There's a range of care that can be given, as we spoke about. At SOC, we even provide ICU doctors to take care of the sickest patients because we know that ICU doctors save lives.
And is this usually just done through the telephone, or is this usually done through a device?
Well, telemedicine can be just the, sir, it can be absolutely just the telephone, but increasingly we're including video technology, certainly almost always in the hospital setting, but also with patients in their homes.
Right. So like some of the elderly patients that maybe don't have the technology or don't know how to use the technology, they still can just be able to consult with their doctor through the telephone.
Absolutely. They can call their primary care physician, and there's so much that they can do by through the telephone. But I'll be frank with you that I'm finding most of my elderly patients are pretty good at using a smartphone these days.
Oh, that's good. They're savvy. That's nice. That's
yes.
Great. Yeah, we gotta keep everybody up with the times. So 25% of hospital care could be performed remotely through the use of telemedicine. And then the other part, you know, you'd have to go to the actual hospital to get checked out. But are you seeing the numbers rise in people using telemedicine, especially in the past couple of weeks? Is that a continuous rise as the weeks go on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Telemedicine is exploding, and it is going to provide so much care during this infectious disease crisis, both in patients' homes and the hospital setting. Once we come through this, and we will, we don't know what the new balance will be. At SOC, we estimate that probably 25% of the care in the hospital might be provided by telemedicine, because we know there's still a shortage of doctors nationwide. And even in urban settings in Washington, D.C. and in Baltimore, there's a shortage of critical specialists at any one time, in various areas. And telemedicine really takes all that out of the equation.
So the MHCC views telehealth as an important strategy to improve access to care and reduce healthcare costs. And the expansion of telehealth in a variety of healthcare settings is one of MHCC's five strategic priorities. What are the other priorities? Do you know?
I don't know their full priority list, but it's really about access to care in a convenient manager. A convenient manner. And the greatest benefit to patients is it's really use of their time, good use of their time.
Absolutely. So do you suggest that people contact their doctor's offices and their local hospitals and get the information and maybe keep it on the side of their fridge? I like to keep everything on the side of my fridge just so it's easy access. And that way, if they do have a problem, they can just access it and get in touch with somebody. Is it pretty easy, or is there like a wait time? Does it get booked up quickly?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, the first thing is, as you said, to call your primary care physician or get the number for your local hospital, and they can connect you with services frequently by telemedicine. It is very convenient. Most primary care doctors are seeing patients with scheduled appointments, calling them at home and using a video connection if needed. And it's very convenient, just like you would be scheduled in the office.
Now, this is important to bring up. It's not just for people that are experiencing potential symptoms for coronavirus. I mean, you have things like teleneurology for stroke care. My mother is a 2-time stroke patient, so that's very comforting to hear. And telepsychiatry, mental health. I mean, you're locking people in the homes, and this has got to be taking a toll. That's great to have access to for telemedicine.
Absolutely. Those are very important specialists that traditionally have been very hard to access. And we at SOC started our physician practice over 15 years ago with teleneurology, and then soon after went into telepsychiatry, and now provide even critical care services.
Wow. That is so great to know. Thank you so much, Dr. Jason Halleck, for coming on the show and talking all about telemedicine. We appreciate having you today.
I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. This is Maryland Viewpoints, a presentation of the Maryland News Network. Heard on radio stations across Maryland, the views expressed in this program are not necessarily the views of radio station ownership, management, or advertisers. Join me again next time for Maryland Viewpoints. I'm Meredith Marks.